Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game here on VSiN. Matt Kelly. As we head right out to the phone line here, want to make sure to have enough time to talk about everything going on over there in Major League Baseball with Joe Sheehan, Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter at Joe_Sheehan over on the Twitter machine as well. Joe, appreciate you making the time, man.
Hey, man, I'm just surprised. Don't you read like 13 tweets before getting the guest?
Ooh, not Matt Brown.
I like the shot. Yes, that's amazing. I love the shot when Gil's not in. Joe, listen, we're going to get to your plays here in just a second, but obviously the thing that is looming, the trade deadline, people are trying to know who's going to be buyers, who's going to be sellers, and the biggest question surrounding the Tigers. They were playing a little bit better since June the 1st, and now here they go, dropping four in a row, falling seven games under 500. Is it crazy to think that today might decide what they're going to do with their season? Because you got to think, if you're going to move a guy like Tarek Skubal, you got to have more than a couple of days to talk about it with teams. You got to field a bunch of different offers. You can't decide on Sunday you're going to do this. So is today a very, very important game for the Tigers franchise?
Yeah, they all are this week, Matt. But I will say that these conversations have been going on all year. They're not just picking up the phone when they decide. They've laid the groundwork. They've been listening to other teams. This isn't going to be a surprise if they do decide to trade Skubal. Skubal's scheduled to start tomorrow. And, you know, if you're trading for Skubal, that's like 10% of the value. He's got about 10 starts left in the season. So, you know, you'd like to do this today and get him in and get that start for you. I did a whole thing yesterday about how they shouldn't trade Skubal. Guys, if you look at the prices paid for rentals over the last 10 years, since that year that the Cubs overpaid for Gleyber Torres and Aroldis Chapman and the Guardians overpaid for Andrew Miller. Ever since then, rental players, Manny Machado and guys like that, just haven't brought back a whole lot. So I think that the Tigers, who statistically are still the best team in this division, who are six games out in the division, still in the wild card mix, I don't think they're going to get back enough for Skubal to justify trading him. I think they try to add in the bullpen, add a bat, and go ahead and try to steal this division. Remember, we saw the Guardians come back from 15 down last year. So seven down with 2 months to play is nothing.
Yeah, Joe, switching over to the National League, has anything changed with the Padres? I mean, they're 1.5 out of this wild card race. Sure feels like the way people are talking about Mason Miller, that he's going to be on the move. Do you think anything's changed there, or are we going to expect him to be heading somewhere else?
No, and it gets to what Matt has been talking about here, where these teams are a three-game winning streak or a three-game losing streak from changing their status. The Padres are basically going to get scheduled into being buyers. Mm-hmm. They got to go play the Marlins over the weekend. This week they come home and they play the Giants and the Rockies, which is the closest thing we have to like John Thompson's scheduling Georgetown back in the day. So, I mean, the Padres literally could end up, you know, three, four games over 500 by the deadline. I think a lot of these teams are going to get trapped by the standings. Like, I can sit here and tell you that the Twins aren't very good, the Orioles aren't very good, the Astros aren't very good, but I just don't think you can go to your fan base a game or two out of a playoff spot and say, yeah, we're going to sell. So I think a lot of these teams are going to end up trapped by the standings. And, you know, the Padres don't want to sell. The Padres don't really want to sell. The Astros don't really want to sell. They're built to win now. So unless this turns into a nightmare week for them with a bunch of losses to the Giants and Rockies at home, I think we're going to see them lightly buy and definitely not sell.
So let's wrap this up then with, we know that the Mets are going to be sellers. They've at least come out and said that so far. Maybe the Blue Jays, considering where they're sitting right now, maybe the Royals, maybe a couple of Angels get on the move there, a Joe Adell or something like that. But is there any big name or that you think could actually realistically be on the move at the deadline? Or are we going to be sitting here on Monday afternoon going, well, that was a dud?
Well, one of the reasons we're seeing all this focus on Skubal and Miller is that the drop off from those two to the rest of the potentially traded guys is pretty significant. We've been waiting for years for the Marlins to trade Sandy Alcantara. They're two games out of a playoff spot. We'll see how their week goes. The Twins, supposedly Joe Ryan was available, but now, the Twins are a game out of a playoff spot. So again, you only have, if you go across the entire league, guys, right now, there are just six teams that are further than five games removed from a playoff spot. 24 teams are within a good week of being in the playoff mix. So it's very hard to identify players because it's very hard to identify teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, we were talking a little bit about these American League divisions earlier. How do you see these shaking out? I mean, we got the race in the East between the Rays and the Yankees. And is what does one team want the one seed more than the other? Does it not really matter? And then what do you think happens here in the AL Central and the West?
Well, I remember when it was back in, I want to say 2011, the Rays and Yankees ran away in the American League East, and they basically just played with their food for the last 2 months because it didn't matter back then, really, whether you got the one seed or the four seed. And that's one of the reasons we got the playoff expansion in 2012 and subsequent one in 2022. It matters now. Getting to not play in that division series matters a lot. So, yeah, I do think these two teams will go for it at least up until September, and then you might see some pitcher management. Kelly, you and I and Gil talked about Cam Schlittler and my perception that he will be managed the way Jacob Mizrowski is currently being managed with his innings. The Yankees have so many starters they can afford to do that. Their issue is obviously hitting at this point. They don't know when they're going to get Judge back. They don't know when they're going to get Stanton back. Now Bellinger's out. It is a very weak offense last night, notwithstanding. And the other, the problem with the rest of the divisions is none of these teams are that good. So that's why you have these clusters in these divisions. You know, three teams separated by 2.5 in the West, four teams separated by 6 in the Central. These divisions are just waiting for somebody to go 9-1, and none of these teams are capable of going 9-1.
Talking to Joe Sheehan, joesheehan.com, Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. Joe, let's talk about one of the teams that we know is not good, but probably not going to be sellers because they're trying to build from the youth aspect of everything, and that's the A's. Shea Langeliers probably was going to be on the move, or at least was going to get a ton of calls anyway. But now that he's done for the season, it looks like this A's team is season is kaput here. And you're going to bet on this season being bad for them.
Yeah, they've lost 20 of 24. And some of that is the injury to Nick Kurtz. He came back over the weekend. But I mean, you look at this team now and based on available talent, no Langeliers, no JT Ginn, no Zach Gelof at the moment, no Brent Rooker. It's probably the 30th team in baseball when it comes to talent. They've had the worst bullpen and the worst rotation over 30 days. They've lost 20 of 24. So I've got the under 67.5 wins at plus money at Caesars as of this morning. To get to 68, they'd have to go 24-32, which is a 70-win pace. And there ain't no way this team is currently constituted is going to play at a 70-win pace. And guys, let me give you one more. Them to have the best record is plus 850 at DraftKings. And, you know, they're 2.5 up on the, Rockies and Angels at this point. Now, I've got the Angels actually to have the worst record for the season. But again, this A's team could very well finish something ridiculous, like 12-42 or something. They're that bad right now. So I like them to not get to under 67.5 wins and best record at plus 850, worst record at plus 850.
Yeah, worst record there with the A's. Like that one, Joe. Always one of my favorite markets, no matter what the sport. I know you've got a bet in the first pitch of the day. We've got the Guardians and the Reds here in about 3 hours from now. Currently, we got Reds about minus 155 to 163 out there. Favorites total set at 9. How are you playing this game?
Yeah, I love when these teams that draw 12,000 people on a weeknight schedule a day-night doubleheader as a makeup. Way to go, guys. Split double. You really had so much demand. You had to do this. But hey, we get afternoon baseball, morning baseball for you guys. Yeah, give me the under in this one. You know, these teams are 26th and 27th in weighted on base against right-handed pitching. You've got Slade Ciccone and Chase Burns pitching today. Both pens get a full reset yesterday. The Guardians actually haven't used their A bullpen since Friday. Coincidentally, it was also the last time they scored. I think last time we talked, I was talking about how, you know, with Travis Bizzano, with Chase DeLauder, they really made some upgrades to the offense, but you look at the numbers and it's still just not very good because the bottom of that lineup is terrible. So give me the under with two of the worst teams' offenses in baseball. You got the early start, there'll be no energy, and I think 9 is just a bad number, under 9.
Joe, we got the Phillies heading down and playing the Marlins in Florida. Nola versus Alcantara, what are you looking at here in this one?
Before we had legal gaming everywhere, I used to tell people about fly to Vegas picks. Because it was worth it to fly to Vegas for. When Aaron Nola starts this year, he's made 21 starts. In 16 of those, the opponent has scored at least 4 runs. He's just not a very good pitcher anymore. He's got both an ERA and a FIP over 5. He's in the rotation because the rules say somebody has to pitch. Andrew Painter and Taijuan Walker both pitched their way off the roster earlier this year. They're faking the number 5 spot. So he's just going to keep running Nola out there. Tonight, you can get the Marlins team total over 3.5 at, you're paying some juice here, minus 140. But again, it's hit 16 of 21 and 9 in a row. The Marlins are a better offensive team than you think, even coming off this terrible stretch. We saw them put up 8 last night, beat up Juan Duran, beat up Zach Wheeler a bit. To me, look, there's no such thing as free money. I'm never going to say that. But this is one of the bets I think that if I give out 100 bets on Visa this year, this is one of my favorites.
Ooh,
I like it. Love hearing that. He's Joe Sheehan, joesheehan.com, the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter, and @Joe_Sheehan over on the Twitter machine. Appreciate you making the time for us today, man, and good luck.
Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Joe. Check out the gaming newsletter these days now, too. He's got some bets flying. Always appreciate it from Joe.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game here on VSiN, and Kelly, we were talking about, you know, we didn't heard anything on this whole Max Crosby thing whenever we were talking yesterday about the AFC West.
Yeah.
And then because our computers are listening to us. No, actually, there was just an article that happened to drop today on ESPN. Yeah, and it was talking about the training camp questions for the Raiders. One of was, will Max Crosby be traded again? You know, and basically saying that even though he's embraced being back, even though he really never left, it's not like they're not going to get calls from interested parties, mm-hmm. especially as we know, because every single training camp, we get a major injury, unfortunately.
Right.
Like, and so there will be some team that thinks that their defensive line is set, and then something's going to happen, and the Raiders will probably get a phone
And
call.
You could say this could happen in the course of the season, too, but it could also just happen to Max Crosby, unless he's sitting out games, right? Like, it's also something that could happen. So I'm a little surprised we didn't hear more about that almost immediately.
Yeah, I mean, but he's the guy that, of all the guy, he's the guy that's just, you know, okay, cool. It loves the community, obviously, mm-hmm. has all the stuff that he does out here and whatever. He's like, okay, whatever, I'm back. Let's let's do it until we don't. Let's do it until we don't. Let's head out to the guest line here. Drew Densick, of course, you can find his stuff over at NBC Sports, Deep Dive Podcast, Whale_Capper. Drew, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Interesting little conversation you're having there about Max Crosby. Andy and I talking about the NFC North this week, and it does feel like all of those teams have a spot for a premier pass rusher. And I was kind of kicking around the idea of like, man, why aren't the Bears calling the Raiders? Mm-hmm. Why aren't the why aren't the Lions calling the Raiders? Like, you know, these teams could really use that that little nudge to push them to the top of what is a really clustered division. And then I kind of looked back and I was like, wait, what was it that the deal that the Ravens had? I forgot. They had 2 firsts.
Yeah.
Yes. Like at the time it didn't really clock as like an overpay, but wow. Like the idea that someone would give up a first in next year's draft at all, you know, considering how talented it is pretty wild. But then, you know, a first from, that was pretty high pick in last year's draft. Crazy also. So, I'm starting to think that there's probably less of a concern about his health, and it was more of just the Ravens realized they overpaid when, backing out with that deal. So, fascinated to see if that setting the bar that high in terms of what the demand is going to be on the Raiders side of the equation keeps him in black and silver.
It certainly doesn't kind of seem to fit in with what they're doing, right? I mean, it seems like this does seem like they're embracing a rebuild here. You bring in Kirk Cousins to probably start the first handful of games before you actually go to your rookie quarterback that you spent the first overall pick on. Like Max Crosby, as good as he is, you look in the mirror, you understand we're not winning anything for another year or two anyway, at the very earliest. And so he doesn't really fit into the plans. I'm like you. I think he's got to be on the move somewhere. It's just the price has got to come down.
Yeah, right. Right. And even if the Raiders are trying to win this year, their schedule is so difficult. And, like the idea of them not finishing fourth in the AFC West feels pretty, pretty far fetched. Win total of 5.5 is squarely on my projection for this squad. I don't really understand the idea of being caught, you know, being slow rolling the Fernando Mendoza experience. Like, get this guy's feet wet. Let's go. I think 2 years ago is probably the best example you'll ever have of a young quarterback in Drake May on a roster that was not competitive, and particularly behind an offensive line that was like going to put him in harm's way. And even in that scenario, you know, with a coaching staff that was wildly inept, cooler heads prevailed and he was the starter by like week five. And so it's really tough to think that your, you know, long-term, you know, ability to get something out of this rebuild, you know, it starts with getting your quarterback some NFL experience. And, you know, presumably you would prefer to start start Fernando in a home game, as opposed to putting him into his first start on the road. And as you look at the home games for the Raiders,
it's the most ridiculous schedule like ever to try to get a rookie in. It's like, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, we could throw him against the Broncos, the Browns, you know, the Seahawks, the Niners, like the Rams. I mean, it's a cavalcade of like absolutely violent pass rushes and or elite quarterbacks on the Raiders schedule this year. And so, you know, there's kind of no good time. You might as well just, you know, kind of get him out there week one, in my opinion. But it sure seems like they're dedicated to this Kirk Cousins experience for some reason.
Yeah, Drew, I'm just enjoying that you kind of just did the same thing I did earlier on the show, because Matt brought up maybe wait until the bye, and I was like, no way. And I'm like, I can't find a better spot to insert. So, maybe. This is brutal for the Raiders.
I mean, the Titans week 16 looks pretty good. Then you get the Cardinals.
Cardinals afterward, that's pretty good. All right, Drew, you and Andy have started doing team by team, division by division. Surely. Over on the Deep Dive. Everybody go check it out. A must listen, I think, as you're getting all your NFL futures and previews done before the season. Biggest takeaway from you so far from any team, any player? Is there anybody you kind of changed your mind on from going into that conversation with Andy?
Changed my mind. I've gotten a lot colder on the Bills than I thought I was going to be. You know, there's a couple of teams where, and actually the exercise of like coming up with a fair price and then building out like the, you know, where could we go from here is kind of the most valuable part of it for me. There are two teams so far that I've put a price together. Like one was the Eagles and one was the Bills. And after it was like there in paper and I'm staring at it, I'm like, this is as high as they're going to be for me all season. Like, there's really only one way that this goes, and it's down. Right. Like the Eagles, you know, they are in my mind, like there is plenty of scope for that offense without AJ Brown to come down in terms of perception and ceiling. That I think they have a high floor defense and probably still win the East, but like rating them as a plus four right now feels very, very optimistic. And they could very clearly be like a one or a two by the time we get to midseason based on the offense just being a little bit unimpressive. And then the Bills, like this defense is like, it is really, really poor. I am blown away by the, you know, kind of lack of quality players across the defensive roster right now for Buffalo. And on the offensive side of the ball, you have the best quarterback in football and Josh Allen, like kind of getting it done with not a lot else. And there was attrition in the offensive line in the offseason. They haven't really, in my opinion, addressed the skill position group. You know, the big move and the big splash was trading for DJ Moore, which is effectively you took a problem off of the hands of the Bears. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah. I don't know if this is necessarily a step forward for an organization who feels like their window is closing. And I kind of am prepared for this to be a little bit of season from hell for Josh Allen. We haven't ever seen one of those. Last year, he ended the season with, you know, limited physical, you know, issues with, you know, having sustained a broken foot. And that was at the end of a year where they, I felt like, had specifically bubble wrapped him, you know, had specifically limited his rushing opportunities in order to keep him healthy for the postseason. And it still didn't work. So, you know, this Buffalo Bills team is a Josh Allen injury away from being ranked 30th, like not that much different than the Dolphins and the Jets. And on the flip side, in division, the Patriots to me feel like a team that's being a little bit slept on. Everybody's expecting a Super Bowl hangover with this tougher schedule and, you know, kind of ignoring the fact that you had a breakout performance and, you know, effectively a co-MVP performance from Drake May last year. And now you're adding AJ Brown to the skill position group. You know, like, it is not hard to remember 2007 when Josh McDaniels had Randy Moss and Wes Welker as kind of new toys to pair with an elite quarterback. And all of a sudden it was like, oh my God, this is the best offense that we've ever seen in football. Right. And now he is not in that same exact situation where you have, you know, peak Hall of Famer Randy Moss, but AJ Brown is a absolute game difference maker, game changer, take the top off the defense player. And Romeo Dubs is a perfect slot player. So you actually now, like, a world where Josh McDaniels is like, I'm going to go back into the playbook and look up some of those 2007 game plans and see if that stuff will work in today's NFL with Drake May. I'm excited to see it. You know, it's the Patriots are not a perfect roster by any stretch of the imagination. I think their defense was they had an opportunity to really improve that group and they didn't. Which I think is ultimately going to keep them from really contending for a Super Bowl this year. But yeah, right now, you know, calling Buffalo versus New England, but New England, I'm coming in with a number that I feel like has scope to absolutely go up. And, you know, they could end up being one of the top five offenses in the NFL. Top three is really their ceiling. Meanwhile, Buffalo to me looks like this is as high as they're going to be all year. You know, just even a just limited performance from Josh Allen, stagnation in the Joe Brady system. To me, this that group could find themselves being neutrally rated pretty quickly. So, yeah, been fun.
As Kelly said, deep dive podcast over there with Drew and Andy at @whale_capper on the Twitter machine. Drew, appreciate the time, buddy.
Best of luck, you guys.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game here on VSiN. Matt and Kelly, appreciate Drew stopping by here with us as we start to talk about, you know, there's some interesting things that are going on. You know, the Vegas scene always changes. You know, this is where we kind of set the tone for the rest of the country, but this is actually them kind of following the lead of some of these other cities where some of these nightclubs have gotten extremely, extremely packed and hard to get into and all the whatever. And so there's now these membership clubs. Basically, you pay monthly for the privilege to go in and then pay them to drink their alcohol. Yeah. But that being said, it is a place that you could, there's a use case to this, which would be if you're in a business in which schmoozing is how you get business.
Sure. You know, networking
and all of that,
but it's often drinks and dinner.
There is a use case to this because you take the person into this place that feels super exclusive. It's not too crowded. So you can find a place to sit down. You're not screaming to be able to talk to each other. So there is a use case for these places or whatever, but they're popping up all over town and you popped up to one for a drink in one.
Yeah, the old poodle room in Fountain Blue. It's very nice. I don't really understand it, but it's nice. Just because it's a membership in Las Vegas. Like most people that are at like a Fountain Blue are not living here.
Okay, fair. I guess it could also be though, like I just said, that if you're in a business in which you're schmoozing people all the time and heading down to the strip constantly.
I agreed. That because person, you're it makes sense for.
Taking, you know, you're constantly taking clients to dinners and things and whatever and all stuff like that. Like being able to have that as part of your little pitch.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, let's pop up there real quick. And you go through the private door and then you take the private elevator and you go into this club that's like super, super nice and all that. I mean, it probably gets you some points.
It's fair. I might have had a few in me when I was up there, Matt, but I went up there and I was like, man, this is great. This is great.
They're all great. They're all at the top of these buildings too. So you get the views and whatever.
There were so many places to sit down and relax. Mm. Like, where are all the people at? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's why. Because there's a membership and that it's... You know, but one of my next thoughts then was like, where are the tables? There's got to be tables at somewhere. Nope, none. No, there wasn't any gambling that I could see, which is just kind of, that's another like Vegas bizarro thing, right? Where you're like, all this floor, we talk about how much this floor space is worth all the time for these slot machines. And I'm like, wow, there's a lot of room up here. No gambling.
Can't. All gaming in Nevada has to be public.
So
they can't do that.
Matt Brown.
So even the exclusive tables in theory,
right, are accessible.
You would be able to access them. It's just they try to make it hard for you to, you know, to do.
Okay, good example of that. The rooftop one at Resorts World.
Yes.
Some of my favorite blackjack tables are up there because it feels like they're secluded. But no, yeah. anyone
can use any of those, whatever. So, okay, Kelly Bidlin, we're getting into these division previews, and we actually, interestingly enough, Drew decided to go ahead and talk about the AFC East, and that's the one that we're going to talk about today as well. We might as well kick things off here with the team that he was talking about in the Buffalo Bills and what could or could not be for this Buffalo Bills team. You still have the best quarterback, probably. I know there's going to be people who want to argue this, but let's put it this way. He's no further than third on anyone's list. And it's basically, it would be a 1A, 1B, 1C situation, even if you said that somebody was better than Josh Allen.
Okay, so, real quick. We don't need to spend 20 minutes on it. Is he the best quarterback in football to you?
If I was starting a team tomorrow, he would be the quarterback that I would start
with. Okay, great. Next question. Is he the most valuable player in the NFL to the point spread?
He would have to be.
He'd have to be, right? And I was kind of thinking about this as Drew was talking. He has to be. And this year specifically, I mean, and you could bring this over to last year too, go back. It feels like he is worth the most of the point spread and by a margin from what we've seen in a while. Because I think we're going to go talk about the rest of this team. I think you could easily make the case that, like Drew said, Josh Allen is not on this team. Where is this Bills team at? Yeah. They're nowhere near. I mean, the Patriots are a massive favorite to win this division if he's not on this team. And I think we're probably talking about a bottom, I don't know, 10 team in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would depend on who you threw back there, but sure. I mean, it's they're not completely devoid of talent. If you look, by the way, the reference to the number that Kelly's bringing up, -136 for them to win the division, +125 for the Pats, and then 19-1 for the Jets and 40-1 for the Dolphins. You have Josh Allen, of course. James Cook has been a very solid running back for this team. He's been able to do a guy that's been able to kind of do it all for them. Dalton Kincaid kind of had a breakout season last year. It was almost because he had to, though. There was no one else to throw to and no one else to make plays. So Dalton Kincaid had a really good year. You look at this wide receiving core and it kind of comes down to what we were talking about yesterday. It's like, you just look at the wide receiving core and go, you know, I see the Chargers and I see these wide receivers that they have, and I know that there is pedigree there, but I haven't really seen it with my own eyes. Well, DJ Moore, we have seen good seasons from him, obviously. I mean, like 2023 was a great season for DJ Moore, but he's never been looked at as an elite receiver in the NFL. And then Khalil Shakir is just what Khalil Shakir is. He's kind of more of a gadget dude. Slip him a bubble screen, you know, try to get the ball in his hand so he can, you know, shake some dudes and whatever and all that. But like,
again, he's great. I think he's great and he fits perfectly with this team, but they've always needed that other guy on the outside.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then if you look who then is next, because you start to look down on the list here at the wide receiver position, and like, you've got Josh Palmer, Keon Coleman experiment. They tried to get rid of him. You know, you don't really love those guys or whatever. So it gets thin very quick, right? By the way, Shavers
made a couple catches last year.
Yeah. Mecole Hardman is on this, like, you know, on this team as well with all of that. So it gets thin very, very quick at the receiving position. Now the offensive line's actually pretty good. I know Drew said there was a little bit of attrition, but it's overall, I think the more parts than not are good for them. So I don't think Josh Allen's gonna be running for his life or anything.
One of the best centers and left tackle combinations in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
Between McGovern and Dawkins.
And then even on the right-hand side, having Spencer Brown, I think is quality as well. On the defensive side is where things do get a little bit interesting. You've got a couple of corners that are questionable at best. You look at the defensive line and you have to wonder, okay, can Bradley Chubb rekindle some magic, right? Because
he's a complete scheme change to start with. Yes. Right. I mean, that is no more Sean McDermott. This is Jim Leonard in complete scheme change of how we're going to line up here.
And you look and like Russo's been fine for them for sure. But then you look at that secondary level, the linebacking core is weak. You look at the safeties, the safety position is weak as well. And so if this Patriots team, which we'll talk about next segment, if this Patriots team does take a step forward, you start to look and maybe this is a whole lot more even than it looks. And maybe this is actually wrong team favored in this division, because if this defense is gettable and you look at the, and you look at what they're going to have to do on offense, which is again, make magic out of kind of thin air with Josh Allen throwing to DJ Moore and Khalil Shakir and Josh Palmer and Keon Coleman and stuff like that. There could be a power shift going on in this division, maybe sooner than we even thought.
Yeah, could be. It's going to be a wait and see for me. I am in on the Bills. I bet them to win the division. Now, I would bet it that way over a win total as opposed to a win total, because I'm just trying to isolate. I think this is a two-team division, right? I think this is Bills versus Patriots. I don't think the Jets and Dolphins are involved in this at all. We'll talk about them as well next segment. But I'm isolating that. Patriots, we're going to talk about them. It's going to be a lot of schedule conversation, right, from last year to this year, which I think is fair. But still think Drake May is a very good quarterback. And yes, could we hit a point where, maybe this team looks far, way quicker developed than we were expecting? Yeah, I think it's possible. I'm just wondering, I think the Buffalo defense is fascinating because I don't know. I think it's very repeatable what they did on offense last year. It was this kind of like clunky, unsexy rushing attack, right? Like, we're going to feed James Cook a ton. Drew brought up kind of bubble wrap Josh Allen, but use him when we need to, right? Just move the chains, move the chains. Second best running attack over Pro Football Focus in the NFL last year. I don't know that we're going to see anything vastly different from that, especially with it's only DJ Moore that you added, right? You didn't go at a huge name wide receiver on the outside. I think that offensive attack stays pretty similar. The defensive questions are absolutely fair, though.
Guys, the quest for $18.7 million, episode number 2, hits tomorrow. But if you missed episode 1, don't worry. Head to the VEASAN YouTube channel. You and a whole bunch of other people have been able to take in episode number 1. Go in, kind of set the tone here for the series. One rollout every single Wednesday over the course of the whole show here, taking us all the way down to the check ceremony whenever we get the winners for not only Survivor, but Grandissimo as well. So VEASAN YouTube, 9 p.m. Eastern tomorrow and every Wednesday, but you can catch up on episode 1 sitting over there on the channel right now as it is. Kelly, we will talk the Dolphins and the Jets. I'm sure that won't take much time for us to kind of get past them.
I'm going to guess mainly Patriots.
Yeah, for the thoughts on those teams and what we think that they are capable of doing and or not doing, which I guess it's more of the not doing here in this division. And then, get to that New England Patriots team that made the big offseason move, acquiring A.J. Brown. Is that going to be enough for Drake May and company to unthrone the Buffalo Bills here in the AFC?
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Switch to some baseball talk here on a numbers game as we had an interesting conversation with Adam Burke yesterday, our fine managing editor over at VSiN.com. Shout out VSiN.com. Go in, give Adam and team a couple of clicks. We like the clicks. Page views.
You can give him a follow too.
Yeah.
At Skating Tripods.
Yeah. Go in. Couple clicks.
At Betting on
X. He'd probably prefer the clicks. But you
probably
know,
prefer the clicks.
Probably prefer the clicks.
Yeah.
So click around a little bit.
Buy some from the VEASAN store.
Yeah, page views are great. But it did, as we talked through some stuff though, lead me to go ahead and throw in a bet in the account. And
did you?
Yeah. And so we were
MLB Awards?
Yeah, we were talking about Major League Baseball and the MVP. And through us talking about all of that,
holy Shohei.
Yeah.
It's plummeted even more.
The odds for Shohei Ohtani from yesterday are cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys that we talked about that I have in the account at 100-1 has now fallen to 75-1 in one CJ Abrams that we had brought up yesterday. And you can still find Jacob Mizorowski out there at 100-1. And Kelly, the reason that we were talking about that and the reason that we said that this could be a thing is mainly because Shohei is not going to pitch. We don't know for how long, maybe not until the postseason.
Right.
And if you look underneath the hood, he's not hitting all that well.
Yeah.
He's not hitting all that well.
Did Miz pitch yesterday?
No. 2 days ago.
I'm kind of laughing that we brought him up and we're getting excited about possibly Miz at MVP market at 80-1 and he's 150-1 at DraftKings today.
Oh, well, I guess
they respect
just
our opinion so much.
It was 100. I guess they're just balancing the book a little bit because, like, you see that this.
Yeah, so Pete Crow, that's true.
Pete Crow Armstrong.
Even money.
Is even money now, where yesterday plus 165. James Wood up a little bit from 28 to 30. But then Schwarber falls to 65. Like this was an active market.
You know, this is moving right now too.
Yeah,
I just saw James Wood flash from 22 to 30 to 1.
Yeah, so this is what I'm saying. These are people coming in and getting after this. I'm wondering if there's some underground Shohei news out there. I wonder if Shohei might be heading to the IL that we don't know about.
Okay,
you know.
Yep.
Look, everything's flashing. I'm watching screens flash as we speak.
Ectel Marte. Yeah.
Oh. We'll see if our guest has a thought on any of this as Paul Sporer joins us here from Fangraphs. Paul, how you doing, buddy?
I'm well. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
So we're looking at this National League MVP market. We were just having a discussion kind of free-flowing yesterday on the desk. We're like, you know, this seems like Shohei is pretty vulnerable in this market right now because he's not going to pitch. He's not hitting that well. And you have these other guys that are playing out of their minds. And now literally since yesterday, the odds on the MVP is cut in half. Pete Crow Armstrong now falls down to even money. Some of these other guys, I have CJ Abrams from yesterday at 100 in my account is now to 75. We're watching guys get bet as we speak. The screen continues to flash left and right. So, I guess everyone's starting to think the same way I am, or that me and Kelly and Adam Burke were yesterday, that maybe this is not just we just stick the crown on the guy every single year, especially if he's not going to be on the mound pitching.
Right. And I think that's the big thing is that if Shohei's not playing, then he's not going to get it. Right. I am of the mind generally that a healthy Shohei season when he's doing both is the MVP pretty easily. But this is why I don't jump on the favorites early either, because it feels like you can only come down from there. And when he was at the perch, when he's going to win the Cy and the MVP, remember, he was so gung-ho about getting a Cy because he was pitching so well. And I'm very pro Shohei here, so I was fine with him pitching and all that. But things happen over the course of 6 months, and now he's done pitching. Is anything going to be affected with this leg, with his hitting? Are they going to start taking some time there? Because that's the thing with the Dodgers is they can always slow play it as much as they want, or as much as he'll allow. Let's be clear. Mm-hmm. He doesn't necessarily operate 100% by their rules. He's got to kind of co-sign it. But I think if this leg's bothering him a whole bunch, they're going to say, hey, can we get you 3-4 days a week type of vibe? Mm-hmm. Can we slow you down a little? Which opens the door completely. PCA playing out of his mind. Abrams, those two are playing probably the best right now. James Wood would have gotten a bunch of love, you know, if we caught him at the right peak. He's still been amazing. And then you got even longer shots like a Bryce Turang, who brings the defensive piece with it. And Oda Lopez in Miami, who also brings a defensive piece with it. I think it's wide open. And what if somebody like an Ellie goes crazy in the second half and brings Cincinnati, pulls them back into this mix type of vibe? It's so much unwritten right now. Truly couldn't pay me to do a Shohei bet unless he was somehow way down the board. Otherwise, I'm open on a bunch of these guys.
Yeah, Paul, I'll just run through them for you right now. I mean, it's Ohtani minus 125, Pete Crow Armstrong's even money, and then we drop down to James Wood at 35-1, Schwarber 65, Abrams 90, Bryce Harper 120, everybody else 150-1 or longer. Does any of those names or numbers jump out to you, or is it one of the other guys you just mentioned?
No, I like both of the Nats. I'm really curious to see what they do. This trade that they made with Curtis Meade for Connelly Early is an excellent deal. Everyone loves it for them, but it is more of a long-term deal. Early's hurt right now. They don't know what they're going to get out of him. So that doesn't necessarily help this year unless he comes back. Are they going to be making moves to kind of get themselves better? I've always been of the mind that the team performance should not influence an individual award because it's an individual award, but we know that that's not true. So we can't just cover our eyes and pretend that some voters don't go off of that. So if Washington doesn't stay in the mix enough, I do think that hurts both those guys. That's where you start elevating somebody like a Schwarber because they're going to be in the mix. PCA playing his best ball right now, but we know he can go dangerously cold too. That's why I generally move further down the board here. The real long shot is Corbin Carroll for me. I think he has all the MVP pedigree that you need. I really think he just needs that team context again, because you got to go with where the voters are going. I don't necessarily subscribe to this and I want to divorce myself from it, but we know voters go that way. If Arizona gets all the way back into this, I'm very curious to see what they do in this next week and they make a playoff push. I think Carroll could be the guy that really brings them forward there and then starts to get the MVP attention with the floor kind of clearing up. I'm not sure PCA is going to play at this high level the rest of the year, but he has made major improvements. I hated his swing and miss last year to go with no walks. He's tripled his walk rate, so now his swing and miss is a lot more palatable. I would say PCA is my favorite right now with Shohei just behind, but then a wide open floor after that.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And you bring up Ellie, like even missing some time due to injury, Paul, I mean, he's still a very real 30-30 candidate here. And like you said, yep. If for whatever reason, the Reds could climb into contention again, and he would be a big part of it. Obviously at 150-1, you have made worse bets. I'll put it that way.
That's exactly it. Right. And because it is so open right now, you can get a little cute down the board. And like you said, this is not going to be the worst bet you make. I think everyone's a live dog because of the Shohei news constantly getting worse right now. And if you don't believe that PCA is going to be this guy the rest of the year, if you do, then sure, go with him. I'm a little bit more skeptical that he'll stay at this height.
Yeah. I mean, we saw him collapse the second half last year, right? We'll see. Obviously, you're a Detroit guy, a very pivotal week for them. The loss yesterday certainly doesn't help the, hey, we're going to be buyers or we're going to keep Scooble thing. So when it's all said and done, are we talking about Tarik Skubal being on a different team? Or do you think that this Detroit team is sitting in a room right now going, I'm not scared of any of these teams above us. Like we cannot sell right now.
They shouldn't be scared. They do. They are the best team in that group. I say that without bias of homerism. You know, I think my credentials of being critical on the Tigers have been shown on this show over the years. But you go to the easiest number, the run differential. They're the only team with a positive one in that collective. Seattle's actually down. They're at +8, but plus 25 for the Tigers. The thing of it is, though, you can't drop two to the Royals by one run. I know it's divisional. I know those are close games. Those are coin flips. That's devastating. And then losing yesterday, it's now three in a row. And I think when they come out of this series, if they don't win the game today and they lose that series to Baltimore, I think that starts to be it. This team, this front office is too smart to not realize that they could trade Skubal, not kill their chances. Let's just say they lose both these to Baltimore. They get swept. They trade Skubal, they get something back from somebody that's going to go right into the team. They're not getting 18-year-olds from this deal because they want to be right back at it next year. They might be better the rest of the way. So they did it before. Now, Jack Flaherty is not Tarik Skubal, even the great Flaherty that he was when he went to the Dodgers. But it's a similar vibe that they would trade Skubal. That would suck in the clubhouse, but you got to realize where you're at right now. And I think dropping two in a row to KC by one run, and if they lose this series to Baltimore, if they come back and win these next two, I'm all in on them pushing. But if they lose these two, that's a huge contributor that they're contender that they're facing. They would have to start to look to trade them because you can get so much for this rental, and then you can make, you know, you can lie about trying to re-sign him next year because we know they're not going.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, Paul, because I mean, I've actually said that to a couple of other people where it's like, I think they can get rid of Skubal and still maybe win this division. I mean, they
100%.
They do have Jackson Jobe coming back. I mean, like, you know, and pitching well in his rehab start. So it's kind of like, you know, he's not Tarik Skubal. But, you know, I mean,
Mel would have to be Skubal. Fromber would have to be better. Yeah. Jobe, even as like a swingman, would be huge if they could help him out of the bullpen. But I agree with you. They don't have to keep him as the only way to contend. I love Skubal. I would love for him to stay. But if they don't win a few games this week, they got to trade him. They really do.
He's Paul Spohr. Find his great work over at Fangraphs, @Spohr over on the Twitter machine as well. Paul, appreciate the time as always, buddy.
Great talking with y'all. Take care.